Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 2nd, 2019. Sudan's opposition calls for more protest, while Transitional Military Council blames the opposition for Sunday's killings. And a lawmaker with the East Africa community is asking why South Sudan's member has been a no-show for months.
I would like to ask from the floor of this house, where is one member, one Honorable Paul Mayom Akechi, Minister for Trade and Industry and EAC for the Republic of South Sudan? Where is he?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Sudanese opposition coalition has called for another mass protest and civil disobedience across the country after Sunday's deadly protests. The opposition says the Sudan Transitional Military Council should be held responsible for the death of 10 protesters reportedly killed by security forces on Sunday. The opposition says it's not ready to hold any direct talks with the military council. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The Sudanese opposition says the protests are aimed at pressuring the Transitional Military Council to hand power to civilians. Opposition representatives are calling on citizens to hold mass protests for the next 2 weeks, day and night, to be followed by civil disobedience on July 14th. The Sudanese Medical Council says at least 7 protesters were killed last Sunday by Sudanese security forces, including one in Atbara of River Nile State. 3 dead bodies were also found Monday morning near Abuanja Bridge in Omdurman neighborhood. The Medical Council also says at least 181 people were injured on Sunday's protest. The Sudanese Transitional Military Council blames the opposition for the deaths and says calls for more protests amounts to inciting violence. General Kamaluddin Umar, the head of security and defense in the Transitional Military Council, told reporters on Sunday night that the Freedom and Change Coalition should be held responsible for the deaths and injuries that occurred on Sunday, including those of 3 members of Sudan Rapid Support Forces who were hurt in Omdurman. Speaking in Arabic, he says security forces arrested 3 protesters. Omar says the Freedom and Change Coalition should take full responsibility for the lives lost both among organized forces and the citizens. Security forces closed down bridges that link Omdurman and Khartoum North to downtown Khartoum. Osman Hamid, the head of the Operations for Rapid Support Forces, admitted to reporters on Sunday that security used tear gas to dispatch the protesters after they tried to march towards the presidential palace. Hamid says the protesters were moving towards homes of martyrs, but after a while, they decided to march towards the presidential palace and therefore security forces used tear gas to dispatch them. A spokesman for the Sudanese Professionals Association, a member of the Freedom and Change Coalition, condemned the use of force against the peaceful protesters and called for an investigation into the incident. Speaking to Al Hadas TV channel in Sudan, Ismail Taj says members of the Sudanese Professionals Association plan to visit family members of people who were killed during Sunday's protests, but says that depends on the situation on the ground. Taj says the association did not identify a fixed route for the protest and the group was ready for any possibility that might occur. Haj Hamad, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, says the protest is a clear message to both the Transitional Military Council and the opposition that the revolution still belongs to the Sudanese people. Hamid says although the military council was involved in public rallies for the last 3 weeks to gain the support of the traditional leaders, Sunday's protest is a clear indication that many Sudanese are still demanding civilian rule.
Demonstrations in the street have really completely convinced them that they have a apartheid. They have to negotiate seriously with the opposition.
Hamid believes the mass protests will force the military council and the opposition to return to the negotiation table and reach to a compromise soon. Late last week, the African Union and Ethiopian officials mediated talks between the opposition and the council, after which the mediators announced that both the military council and the opposition expressed their satisfaction with a joint proposed transitional plan to move forward. Now, it is not clear when or if the two sides will meet again anytime soon. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
From Khartoum, we move to Juba, where a lawmaker at the East African Community Legislative Assembly is wondering why South Sudan's Minister for Trade, Industry and East African Affairs has not been attending sessions at the East African Legislative Assembly for nearly a year. Viola Elias has the story for VOA from Juba.
Lawmaker Abdul Gadir Aden, who represents Kenya, is in charge of the budget committee at the EAC Assembly. He says South Sudan Minister for East African Affairs has not been attending the EAC session for an entire year. Aden expressed his disappointment with the South Sudanese minister during a session held in Arusha, Tanzania last month.
I want to cite a serious issue with regard to this house and the constitution of thereof, because there is one member state which has not been represented in this house for more than a year now, the Republic of Southern Sudan, and I'm saying representation by council. I would like to ask from the floor of this house, where is one member, one Honorable Paul Mayom Akechi, Minister for Trade and Industry and EAC for the Republic of South Sudan? Where is he?
Maumo Watiang, the Undersecretary for the East African Community at South Sudan Trade and Industry Ministry, admits Mayom has not been attending the EAC Parliament sessions.
It is true that the minister had never attended the session of East Africa Legislative Assembly. And that is not for bad reason. I think there were two reasons. I could quote a minister in one of the conversations I had with him over this issue, that he was not attending this thing because he had not been sworn in. The first thing that must happen for him to attend the meetings is to be sworn in. He had never been sworn in.
Since South Sudan was admitted to the East African Community in 2016, the Kiir administration has failed to pay its yearly membership due of $8 million. According to reports from the Committee on the EAC Budget, an estimate for revenue and expenditures, South Sudan owes the regional body an outstanding arrears of more than $19 million. Mao says South Sudan has many challenges.
We have not paid for the last 3 years. We paid something, of course, something to the tune of 3 million and something, almost approaching 4 million. But that is not the requirement. The requirement is that as a member, you should pay fully your commitment. And as I speak, we are still working on it. It is not too late.
Mo admits his country has not met its membership obligation upon admission to the regional bloc.
It is a must that you must attend. This is not just the constitution, it is called the treaty of ISAP. I mean, the treaty that established the ISAP community. There are acts there. We require members to be serious about their obligations once they have been admitted into the community. That much is understood very clearly by the minister and by all of us who are in charge of the EAC affairs.
Article 147, Section 1 of the Treaty Establishing the East African Community stipulates that the regional bloc may expel a partner state from the community for gross and persistent violation of the principles and objectives of the treaty. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
A South Sudanese journalist, Ijo Bosco Modi, has gone into hiding, claiming his life is in danger after he reported on a row between the Torit state governor and state legislative assembly speaker. Modi reported that Governor Tobiolo Alberio Oromo refused to open the Torit state assembly until certain individuals, which he claimed had urged President Salva Kiir to fire him, were held accountable. Onen Walter Solomon has the story for VOA from Gulu, northern Uganda.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from undisclosed location, Modi says state security agents began threatening him in March after iRadio ran a story he produced about a disagreement between Torit State Governor Oromo and State Assembly Speaker Charles Odua. He says security agents told him his report was typically criticizing state government. Modi says security agents arrested him three times. After he was released, Modi says unidentified people began to call and threaten him at 1 or 2 a.m. on several occasions, and at one point, someone dropped a letter under his door, which threatened him for criticizing the government.
If you don't leave Torit, we shall finish you. We are tired of you all the time.
Hey, if you don't leave Torit, we shall deal with you. We are tired with you. All the times we have been quiet. I went and reported this to police on daily basis. Just anything happened, but all in all, no any step is taken. After again a week, these people came, now knocking at the window. I should open the door. I should open the door.
Modi says that's when he decided to leave. iRadio station manager Kongpal confirms Governor Romas Amount and interrogated Modi over the news article. Paul says since the governor and assembly speaker both spoke to Modi on the record, he doesn't know why Modi was threatened.
It became an issue of security. We are still investigating whether really his life is in danger or not. He knows what happened. He knows the environment. He may be right. And we cannot tell him that he should not leave the country.
Paul says the iRadio management asked Torit State authorities to inform the National Media Authority about their complaint. Ochaya James, a press freedom officer at the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, says their preliminary findings indicate Modi was arbitrarily arrested and detained for several hours by state security agents on May 9th. James says later the State Ministry of Information prevented Modi from broadcasting on its local state-run radio, 97.5 FM, the voice of Eastern Equatoria.
We relocated him from Torit to Juba. He stayed here for 2 weeks. Another letter was delivered again to his wife at home in Torit. Whereby they say they are aware of the relocation of Mr. Bosco to Juba, but that means that it is not the end of their mission. So Juba is a big place for them, and it is a good place whereby their mission can be accomplished. But now, as the union, we are really too focused on the safety of our members, on the safety of the journalists of South Sudan. So we decided not to keep him in Juba.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus yesterday from Torit, Governor Romo says Bosco reported falsely that a committee from the Council of State in Juba went to Torit and investigated him regarding his refusal to open the state assembly.
There was no delegation from the Council of State to investigate the governor on the closure of the parliament. What I know, the MPs were coming to disseminate the revitalized peace agreement in Torit State in which we participated. Hijo Bosco did not report exactly what was happening.
Governor Roma admits he summoned Modi to his office but denies making any threats against him.
Ijo Bosco was called to cancel his false statement that he gave in the hair and tell that what I gave to high radio was false, and here he was free. Nobody even was thinking about him. Nobody looking for him.
James says the Union of Journalists will meet with the media authority and Torit State authorities soon over the allegations. He says the union has so far registered a dozen cases of threats against journalists from Rumbek, Yei, and Nawil. He says no cases were reported from Jonglei or Yambio since March. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Gulu, Northern Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what are some of the achievements of the warring parties in South Sudan? We'll bring you an answer to that question right after this break.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you believe Africa can do without aid from Western powers? Why or why not?
Yes, we have so many things. We are blessed as Africans. We have fertile soil. Without even applying like manure or something of that kind, you can still plant. We have so many things that can earn us living without getting aid from the Western countries.
Africa, with no aid from US, I think it's a big no. We are not yet there.
Africa has everything it needs. We have a population. We also have resources. What we need is actually leadership and a change of the value system.
Africa can do it. Africa is capable of doing without that aid. One country, Libya, if Libya was able to do it without the Western aid, we are all able to do it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Tune to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for a Tuesday health segment, and today we are talking about the threat of the deadly Ebola virus coming closer to South Sudan. Authorities have confirmed an Ebola case about 70 kilometers or 43 miles from the Democratic Republic of Congo's border with South Sudan. South Sudanese health officials say they have ramped up prevention efforts along the border in recent weeks. The Ebola case in Congo's Beni town was reported today by South Sudan's health ministry, according to the Associated Press. A senior World Health Organization official warns efforts to contain the spread of the deadly virus will remain elusive unless the vicious cycle of violence in the DRC is broken. The latest WHO figures put the number of Ebola cases above 2,200. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
WHO Assistant Director General for Emergency Response Ibrahima Sose Fall says there's been good progress in scaling up operations to contain the spread of the deadly Ebola virus in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces. Fall has just returned from a three-month stint in Butembo, the epicenter of the Ebola epidemic in DR Congo. He says infections are continuing to fall in the major urban areas of Butembo and Katwa, thanks to coverage in all 33 health areas. At the same time, he tells VOA the operation is running into difficulty in the rural areas of Mabalako and Mandima, the new hotspots of the epidemic.
The access is more challenging. And in the same area, we have some villages where you have both ADF, the armed group coming from Uganda, and some Mai Mai groups. So access needs to be assessed on a daily basis to be able to move up to the intervention. So it's really important to take into account this very volatile situation.
Eastern DRC has been politically unstable since 1998. There are an estimated 4.5 million internally displaced people in the country. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees says new displacements are occurring mainly in the eastern provinces of Ituri and North and South Kivu. More than 100 armed groups reportedly are engaged in sporadic fighting in the region. Fall says constant and skilled negotiations with the armed groups are needed to gain access to these volatile areas.
The outbreak started there last year and spread to other diseases. So it's important to break this vicious cycle to contain very quickly the situation in Mabalako and Mandima, where we have more than 55% of the cases coming from.
Fall says it will be exceedingly difficult to contain the virus if more money is not immediately forthcoming. He says $98 million is needed to support the government-led response to defeat Ebola. To date, he says, less than half that amount has been received. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we come back to South Sudan, where the warring parties are left with 4 months to form the Transitional Government of National Unity in November. Last week, the spokesman for South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the SPLM-IO said their forces at cantonment sites lack basic supplies like water, shelter, food, and medicine. Last month, the Crown Hotel in Juba sent a circular to its staff to stop providing services to members of the various warring parties because the National Pre-Transitional Committee, a body tasked with overseeing the implementation of the peace deal, failed to pay hotel bills for its members staying at the Crown Hotel. Raja Mohandis is a member of a civil society task force which signed the September 2018 peace agreement. He's visiting Washington and agreed to be on the show. Rajab, thanks for taking time off to talk about South Sudan.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
The prospect for peace in South Sudan is very limited because of the challenges facing the implementation of the peace deal. What went wrong?
Okay, thank you. First, I would say the parties have been trying, and at the moment, of course, the difficulties we have from the reports that are presented in the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, where I sit representing the civil society, it indicates that there is limitation of resources reaching the various committees responsible for implementation of transitional security arrangements. So this is one major aspect that most of these implementation mechanisms of the transitional security arrangements report to the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. And of course, resources do not just disburse themselves to the institutions. It has to do also with the parties committing these resources and ensuring that they reach to these institutions. But again, I would say that broadly, there is some bit of politics that is involved among the parties in the process of implementation of the peace agreement. Each party wants to be kind of calculative in the process of delivering on the commitments of this agreement.
Yeah, and you have been in the forefront of the search for peace. And can you give us or give our listeners a scorecard of what has been achieved so far since the transitional period was extended to another 6 months?
Well, since the extension of this pre-transitional period, there has been a lot of activities with the institutions primarily working on the transitional security arrangements. There has been a survey or assessment of the cantonment areas and arrangements to deliver supplies to these cantonment areas. In a discussion I had with the chairperson of the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, he actually says there is a good prospect at the moment, some progress in these activities than before.
And you are, you know, we hear all kind of reports from South Sudan. You had on this show, there's a journalist who has gone hiding because he's afraid for his life. And there are also reports that the space for civic engagement is shrinking. I remember in May, your group was prevented by the National Security from presenting your findings on the implementation of the peace deal. How are you ensuring that these parties abide by the terms of what they have signed in the agreement?
Well, we are represented in various institutions of the peace agreement as civil society. I represent the South Sudan Civil Society Forum and also a member of the Voluntary Civil Society Task Force. And, of course, in May, when we tried to release a report, we did not get security clearance to do that. And I think...
This sounds like a violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement, because in that agreement, which was signed in 2017, it says clearly that freedom of assembly, people should be allowed to assemble.
Well, the agreement actually mandates us as civil society to be part of its implementation. And what happens is actually that the authorities are so concerned about information that goes out and what content it carries out. And so the national security that provides a security clearance for activities was a bit, they did not openly say you should not hold the activity, but they just delayed to give the security clearance, and so the activity could not proceed. But we continue to engage with all of these actors, with the national security, with the state authorities, with the parties, to ensure that we collectively contribute to the implementation of the peace agreement. And we're hopeful that these engagements will yield results and that.
And you know, you depend on the media for disseminating information to the people out there. But we are hearing cases. I mean, the Luwata newspaper has been closed indefinitely by the media authority in Juba. And these are the people who are supposed to take your voices out there. Again, I'll take you back to the cessation of hostility agreement signed in December 2017. That agreement says the media should be left to do its work as it wish. Now, here is a situation where one media is closed down. Today, there's a journalist in hiding because he's afraid of his life. How are you guys going to disseminate your information when the messengers are being pursued?
Well, I would not project it completely as a situation that presents complete shutdown of the media. There are a number of media houses that are operating, and they are very resourceful and helpful to us. There are some of these issues. We are aware of some of these issues. But again, there are engagements with the different media authorities. And so some of these concerns, some of these issues happen really down at the lowest levels with individuals that take that are supposed to be in charge of monitoring some issues to do with security and so on. But we believe that with political leadership from the parties, the space will be widened for civic engagement, and that the implementation of the agreement will move on.
Well, Rajab, thank you very much for your time. I know that you are preparing to go and catch your flight back home. Thank you for coming and talking to us. If you have just joined us, that's Rajab Mohandis, a member of the Civil Society Task Force, which signed the 2015 peace deal. Mohandis is here in Washington for meetings. Thank you for coming here.
You're welcome.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Roda by Awilo and Eddie Kenzo. We have been listening to Awilo and Eddie Kenzo with the song Rother. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Shake this, shake it that, shake it this, shake it that, shake it this, shake it that, yeah.